Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. Standing on the grassy hillock overlooking the murky brown water, its surface alive with bugs so big, Vince McMahon wanted to give them contracts. I thought this was a bad idea. Something stung the back of my gritty neck, and I slapped it. I was deep in the jungle-like grip of the Florida Everglades. Tangles of underbrush surrounded me like hangman's noose. The tropical sun pounded down on me from the cloudless sky, and the buzz and whine of nature droned in my ears. Slimy sweat coated my body, and the green L.L. Bean knapsack cut into my shoulder. I wore hiking boots, cargo shorts with pockets for days, a plaid shirt, and a baseball cap. I looked like a weekend backpacker, and not like a man who had just knocked over an armored car and shot somebody. It was noon, and I had been waiting for my contact for a half an hour. I was impatient, and getting ready to apply another layer of off to my bug-bitten arms and legs. When the palm fronds to my left rustled, I reached for the gun tucked into the small of my back, but stopped when a tall, dark-skinned man wearing jeans and a leather vest stepped out. His skin was deeply tanned, and an American flag bandana was wrapped around his head. His black hair was greasy and matted, and his dark eyes stared out from beneath a hard brow. At a glance, I'd say he was black. At a second glance, well, I didn't take any glances until I saw a reason to. "Alan Summers?" I asked.
"That's me,"
the man said. His voice was flat and toneless, without life or emotion. I had never met Alan Summers before, but we had a mutual friend, David Ray. Davey and I did time together in Louisiana. He was a big old boy from Georgia who claimed to be part Seminole Indian even though he looked like your standard white redneck. A few days before, I robbed a Brinks car in Shreveport and shot the guard in the arm. I made off with $800,000 and needed a way out of the country. Davey said that for a price, he'd meet me on the coast in his boat and pilot me to Mexico. He said that the best way to get there was through the Everglades. "The cops won't look for you there," he told me. "No one goes in there." Because I didn't know crap about the Everglades, I needed a guide. And here that guy was in the form of a 6-foot-tall, 200-pound Seminole with a knife on his belt and a rifle across his back. He reminded me of John Redcorn, only less handsome. Actually, he looked more like a darker Crocodile Dundee.
"Come on," Alan said.
He disappeared through a screen of palms, and I followed without question. I knew Davey was all right, so I assumed Alan was too. He'd get a cut when it was all said and done. But he could kill me, bury me in the thicket, and get it all, so there was that. For the first hour, Alan led me through the dense forest, stepping wide from one firm patch of ground to another. Flashes of green, scummy swamp water played peekaboo through the undergrowth, and the smell of earth and rot assaulted my nostrils. Alan said nothing to me, and I said nothing back to him. I wasn't here to make nice, and neither was he, for that matter. I wanted out of the country, and he wanted his $10,000. That is all. "What kind of crap's out here?" I asked finally. "Gators, right?"
"Snakes," Alan grunted. "Spiders. Everything."
"Everything, huh? I doubted we'd come across a McDonald's, but okay."
"Don't take your shoes off except to change your socks," he went on. "And watch your step.
You're the boss." 3 or 4 miles in, we came to an ugly green river. An old flat-bottomed canoe rested upside down on the dusty shore. Alan went to it, and I followed. We flipped it over and pushed it out into the water. I got my boots and socks wet, but I brought plenty of socks. Davy said if you wore wet socks out there, you'd get jungle rot like the boomers used to get in Nam. Alan and I both began to paddle, and I looked around at the green inferno raging on either side of us. The walls of vegetation were so thick that you couldn't see past them. "This river is haunted," Alan said over his shoulder.
"Haunted?" I asked.
For the first time, Alan showed emotion. His lips curved up in a nasty grin.
"That's what they say."
"Ah, bullshit. Let me guess," I said. "Indian curse?"
"Nah, it's always been haunted," Alan said. "Long before the Indians came."
A bird cried on my right and I jerked. "So it was haunted before people ever showed up?" Alan's paddle dipped into the water.
"That's what they say."
"By what? You can't have ghosts without people." The big man lifted and lowered one shoulder.
"I don't know. Something."
What little ammunition had crept into his voice drained away as he tired of the game, and for a while, neither one of us spoke. Branches jutted from the water like clawed hands rising from shallow graves, and green-slitted eyes watched us from secret coves. Not a single breath of air stirred in the whole swamp, and sweat soaked my clothes.
"I don't believe in ghosts," Alan said, "but this place has a bad reputation. Everybody avoids it."
I looked around. I could see why.
"They say there's things back here that don't make any sense. Scary things. No one comes out, and if they do, whatever they saw drove them crazy."
Ghost stories were fun and all, but I was tired of hearing about hints and haunts, so I kept quiet. Alan didn't go on, and we were silent again. Dusk came quickly in the swamp. We camped on a hillock overlooking the swamp. Our fire was a faint glow holding back the darkness, and the night came alive with sounds. While Alan cleaned a coon he had caught, I listened to the din of noise, and a shiver went down my spine. I could see why people thought this place was haunted. If I was a stupid redneck, I'd think it was haunted too. We ate and climbed into our sleeping bags. The noises coming from the brush kept me awake for a long time, but I finally fell asleep. When I woke, the hot sun was shining in my eyes. I blinked, and the world swam into focus. Alan was standing over me, holding a knife. My heart jumped into my throat, and he brought the knife down in a killing arc. Instead of plunging into my chest, however, it sank into the long, slithering body of a snake beside me. I sat up quickly and drew my knees to my chest. I had seen 1,000 snakes in my life, but never as big as this. It was a good 10 feet long and as big around as a cat.
"What the hell?" I asked shakingly.
"Told you," Alan said. "There are snakes out here."
He shoved the knife into his belt, turned and walked away.
"Yeah, snakes."
Later, when I grabbed my boot, a giant green spider shot out and darted into the tangle of grass. I snatched my hand back and hissed through my teeth. Now I know why he said not to take off your shoes. We left camp about an hour later. The overhanging trees that had blotted out the sun the day before were gone, and the sky was open, blazing. Birds soared overhead, and I caught the metallic glint of an airplane heading up the coast, likely to Savannah or Jacksonville. As we paddled, I daydreamed about how I was going to spend my money. I was roused from my thoughts when something crashed into the side of the boat, making it rock. Something hit the other side, and it rocked in the other direction.
"What's that?" I asked, alarmed.
But I saw.
We were surrounded by gators. They circled the boat like buzzards surveying fresh roadkill, and every so often, they would nudge the boat. Alan stood and rammed the paddle into one's head, and it responded by snapping its powerful jaws at him. That seemed to galvanize the gators, because they all began to ram into the boat. Panic gripped me and I was whacking at them with my paddle. The boat rocked violently from side to side and finally, it tipped. Hard in throat, I was thrown into the water. The knapsack, heavy with thousands of dollars, instantly dragged me down and brown, choking water closed over my face. I said before I was panicking, but I didn't know shit about panic until then. I thrashed and kicked the water, trying desperately to get to the surface. I couldn't let the pack go, but I couldn't swim with it. I sensed, rather than saw, the gators circling me. And in a moment of mindless hysteria, I slipped out of the straps and let the knapsack go. I shot to the surface and swam for my life. I didn't look back, but I could hear them behind me. Alan was already on the grassy shore, soaking wet and kneeling on his hands and knees to catch his breath. I stumbled onto the bank and turned. A massive gator, its mouth open, a mad grin, came ashore just inches away, chasing me. I screamed, and coming alive, Alan grabbed a branch. He battered the thing's head, grinning his teeth and cursing, and I cowered in fear. Finally, the beast gave up and slunk back into the water, defeated. Alan threw aside the branch and took a deep breath. Now my fear was beginning to dissipate, and horror took its place.
I dropped the money, I said.
I brushed past him and stood on the water's edge, panting and scanning the swamp as though I'd be able to see the knapsack. I wouldn't. Wherever it had fallen, it was resting on the muddy bottom. Black shapes moved through the water, daring me to enter. I took them up on it and went into my knees. At once, they streaked at me like torpedoes. I jumped out and they stopped. It was almost like they were trying to keep me from the money. Alan got to his feet and looked up at the sun.
"We have to get it," I said.
I walked over to him and gestured to the water.
"That's everything I have."
"Correction," Alan said. "That's everything you had." He started to turn, but I spun him around by the shoulder.
"Look, you dumb son of a... Your money's in there, too."
Alan favored me with a look of disgust, then grabbed my hand and twisted it. Pain shot up my arm and I sank to my knees.
"The money's gone," he growled. "Get over it."
He let me go and walked off. For a moment, I knelt there nursing my wounded arm. I couldn't leave it. I couldn't. It was the biggest haul I'd ever gotten. It was the whole reason I was there. I looked out at the water. There were more gators now. Some on the opposite shore, some in the water. They were watching me. I licked my lips and looked after Alan. He was gone. Damn it. Getting to my feet, I ran after the Indian and caught up with him a minute later.
"I'll go in," I said. "Just distract the gators."
"Screw off."
"Please," I said. "I'll give you $20,000.
"No."
I was desperate. "$50,000. Alan's stride slackened, but then he sped up.
"No."
"Come on."
He stopped and turned to me.
"I told you," he said. "It's gone. You think I'm happy about it? I'd never seen gators that aggressive. If we go back in there, we're dead. Just forget about it."
He said that last part bitterly. He turned away and started to walk again. I'm a greedy person, I won't lie, but even I knew he was right. So instead of going back for the money, I swallowed hard, blinked back tears, and left it. For the rest of the day, Alan and I walked west towards a highway he said was nearby. In late afternoon, we came across a field of tall grass. And it wasn't until we were on top of them until we realized they weren't rocks at all. They were skulls. Human skulls. Alan looked around and swallowed hard.
Something's wrong with this place.
Again, he was right. There was something in the air, a sort of tension, like the atmosphere before a thunderstorm. It was heavy, leaden. My skin began to crawl, and I suddenly had the feeling that we were being watched. We camped well away from the river. Shining yellow eyes watched us from the darkness. And at one point, we glimpsed the light of the lantern across the river. It swung back and forth as if toted by a jaunty elf. We watched it for a long, heart-stopping minute, then it was gone.
Swamp gas, Alan said. He didn't sound convinced.
It looked like a lantern to me, I said.
Just swamp gas.
Lying on the ground, I stared up at the starry sky, and before I drifted off, I saw strange lights zipping left and right. Maybe it was a dream, I can't recall. I can't even recall exactly what it was that I saw. Just lights. Maybe more swamp gas. In the morning, animals of every description, from coons and possums to long-necked birds, ringed our campsite. Not moving, not making any noise, just watching us. Alan threw a rock at a white-faced possum, and it didn't even try to flee. It stayed, like a statue. At once, they all turned and scurried off.
I know animals, he said. And that shit's not normal. We need to get the hell out of here.
We walked due west again, soon coming to a marsh. The water was warm and slimy as we crossed, reaching up to our knees at the highest point. Leeches covered our legs, and we had to pick them off before continuing. Animals kept pace with us, crashing through the underbrush on either side. I strained to see them, but never could. God help me, I almost think they weren't there at all. When the boat tipped, we lost our guns and supplies, including water. Our throats were parched and our lips dry. Soon our stomach rumbled painfully, but we could do nothing about it. The swamp water was filled with bugs, scum, and larvae, but before long, it started to look cool and refreshing. I swiped the back of my hand across my damp brow and tried to wet my lips, but I had nothing to wet them with. After a while walking, I started to notice things, like the trees. We passed by that tree, I said and nodded. Alan stopped and looked at it. Without a word, he went to a brief clearing, knelt, and looked up at the sky, his hand shielding the glare from his face. Finally, he turned to me. The sun's not right. What do you mean the sun's not right? I asked. He stood.
Just what I said. Its position is off.
Why?
I don't know, he snapped. Nothing's making sense.
He sounded scared. The thought bothered me for hours. Nothing's making sense, he said. The sun's position isn't right. That sounded like the Bermuda Triangle shit to me. It was crazy, and maybe I was hot and thirsty, but I believed it. No one came out here. Maybe to the other parts of the Everglades, but not here. How many Indians, how many settlers had came here only to vanish? How many had seen the lights in the sky or been struck down by sudden storms? How many people had those animals carried off in the night? How many had gotten hopelessly lost, noticing that things weren't right, but unable to escape? Though I wasn't cold, I shivered. We went south and followed the river for a time. A fleet of gators followed like U-boats, their spined ridges barely visible above the water's surface. We turned east and came along into a clearing. Alan ahead of me. He stopped suddenly and I bumped into him. I started to say something, but stopped. He was rigid with fright. I looked around him, and my blood ran cold.
A massive web was strung between two crooked trees that came together to form a crooked A, and in it was the largest spider I had ever seen in my life. It was huge, as big as a man, bigger even. Its legs were long and spindly and eyes black. Soulless eyes stared out at us with alien contempt. Its mandibles opened and closed, as if anticipation of a warm meal, and quivers of cannibal excitement raced through its brown, segmented body. It came down off of its web and scuffled towards us. Terror filled me, and I did the only thing I could think to do. I shoved Alan towards it and ran. Alan's screams of agony chased me back to the river and beyond. My mind throbbed with insanity, and I think I screamed as I fled. I splashed mindlessly into the water, and at once, the gators were coming for me. I waded as fast as I could, the muddy river bottom sucking at my feet. The gators were closing in fast, streaking towards me. 15 feet, now 10, 5. I stumbled ashore and crashed headlong through the brush, going on instinct and instinct alone. I finally came out of the woods and fell to my knees in the field. Panting, pain flaring in my side, I looked around. The tall trees around were filled with birds. Thousands and thousands of birds. Buzzards, crows, gulls from the ghost. All staring down at me like jurors from a jury box. Their eyes cold, hateful. They began to squawk all at once with the sound of Armageddon, and something inside of me broke. Darkness stole over me, and I knew no more. A hunter found me and drove me to a nearby medical center. I was feverish, dehydrated, and delirious. I told the sheriff my story, and he didn't believe me. He said I had gone out of my mind. In the safety of my hospital bed, I came to agree with him. I probably did see a giant spider, but not that giant. In my stress-addled mind, it looked bigger, meaner. Everything else was a fever dream, too. All of it. Except for Alan. What happened to him? The screaming. You'd scream too if someone shoved you into a realistic huge spider. He probably danced a jig trying to get it off him, cursed me, and went home. That's it. No one had connected me to the armored car robbery, so I went free. I'm still free today, and sometimes I still think about going back and looking for that backpack. The money's probably rotted away by now. But even if it wasn't, I don't think I'd ever go back. I'm content believing it was a fever dream, and I'm afraid that if I go back, I'll find out that it wasn't.